Good. Well, good morning, everybody. I missed my annual visit to you last year because of COVID, so I think it was 2 years since I was last here. But I thought we'd start with a question this morning. If you're like me, your memory isn't quite as good as it used to be. But when you woke up this morning, what was your first thought? Perhaps it was a vivid dream that you'd had. Or perhaps you thought, great, it's Sunday, we can come to church. Well, did you know or realize that when you were asleep last night, you were on a journey? You'd actually traveled 500,000 miles in our orbit around the sun. 67,000 miles an hour we're traveling currently. And these are things that we just kind of take for granted. So I thought we'd do a little bit of astronomy this morning and look at one or two scriptures in that direction. Let's consider the earth, the heavens, and the universe of which we're all a part. Its wonder, the God who created it, but not only created it, is in control of it. John 51 verse 15 says, he made the earth by his power, he founded the earth by his wisdom, and stretched out the heavens by his understanding. And Paul also writes about this in 1 Corinthians. He says, the sun has one kind of splendor, the moon another, and the stars another, and star differs from star in wonder. The earth, again, we take for granted, but it's an incredible place. You might have seen David Attenborough's series, I think it was perhaps earlier this year or last year, called The Perfect Planet, in which he considered lots of different elements that make up the earth, and how everything sort of fits together and works together to make it possible for life to exist. And he looked at light, he looked at weather, volcanoes, he looked at oceans and currents that all sort of interact to make it possible for life to exist. And the earth is often referred to, you've probably heard this term, it's referred to as the Goldilocks planet. The Goldilocks planet. Now, you all know the story of Goldilocks and the three bears. They call it the Goldilocks planet because everything is just right, is just perfect. We could spend a while explaining that, but let me just mention one or two things. We just happen to be the right distance from the sun so that liquid water can exist, because that's vital for life. We've got the right moon in the right place that gives us climate stability. We've got a core in the earth which contains a solid inner core and a liquid outer core. And that interaction between those elements provides protection from solar radiation. And we've got the right tilt of the earth, 23.4 degrees, which gives us the changing seasons, which makes life so interesting. And the right neighbour, Jupiter, which guards us from stellar bombardment. We'd have lots of comet strikes if it wasn't for Jupiter just being in that right place. And so we could go on. One of the very interesting ones, actually, I will just mention, is gravity. Gravity is an interesting thing. We could spend the morning talking about that, but it just happens to be set perfectly. If it was just a fraction out one side or the other, again, life on earth wouldn't be possible. And it's great, isn't it, that we know the God who formed the earth and set everything in its place to provide a habitat for us. Interestingly enough, Professor Brian Cox, who's regularly on television, did a series recently, and he actually admitted that in our Milky Way galaxy of 200 billion stars, He does not expect to find intelligent life anywhere else. And I thought that was quite interesting, that it just shows really and demonstrates how special the Earth and its related planets are. So, let's just look now at three. I'd just like to take you through three little sections of the Bible that just explains how God is in control of all that is around us. You remember the story of the Israelites fleeing from Egypt. And you remember that the Egyptians decide that they shouldn't have let them go, and they set off in pursuit. And before they cross the Red Sea, the Egyptians are closing in. And the scripture tells us in Joshua 24, the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help, and he put darkness between the Israelites and the Egyptians. And that darkness was, you know, it was a complete blackout, so that even though they were fairly close, they couldn't actually see each other. And then going on in the story, Joshua 10 verses 12 to 14 describes when the Israelites have crossed the Jordan and are entering the Promised Land. We read a very interesting story in Joshua chapter 10, which I'll just turn to. This is just an amazing story. Just to fill you in on the background, the Israelites have defeated Jericho, the walls had fallen. They then eventually take a little city called Ai. And then you probably heard about the Gibeonite deception. This was a group of people who lived fairly near, but they sort of adapted themselves to look like they lived a long way away, came to the Israelites to say, look, we've come from a long distance, can we have a treaty with you so you won't attack us? And instead of inquiring of the Lord, they sort of signed up to this. And there were five Amorite kings who thought, hey up lads, we're next on the hit list. They're going to attack us next. What are we going to do about it? So they formed an alliance, and they attacked the Gibeonites because they knew that Joshua and his army would try and protect them because of this treaty they'd made. And let's pick up the story. Basically, the five Amorite kings engage in battle, and it says God sent these giant hailstones from the sky that defeated a lot of the Amorite army. But then we read this in Joshua 10, verse 12. On the day the Lord gave the Amorites over to Israel, Joshua said to the Lord in the presence of Israel, O sun, stand still over Gibeon, O moon over the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, till the nation avenge itself on its enemies. The battle was going well for Joshua and the army, but they were running out of daylight, and they wanted to make this defeat complete. So Joshua cried out to God, and it says, the sun stopped still in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. There has never been a day like it before or since, a day when the Lord listened to a man. Surely the Lord was fighting for Israel. This is an incredible astronomical event. Never happened before, never happened since. How could it have happened? It's against all the laws of physics for the sun to seemingly stand still. And there are all sorts of interesting YouTube observations about how might God have done this. Did God freeze time for those 24 hours? Did the somehow the planets sort of stop moving? But that's almost impossible. But God is a God of impossible. Maybe God shone his Shekinah glory onto that battle area so that it stayed light for those 24 hours. It's open to speculation just what exactly happened, but we know that God was able to control the sun and the earth so that the battle was completed. You know, sometimes in our Christian lives, there are what I call moments of miraculous mystery. When God steps into our lives and our situations, and we see just his power and his majesty. And in those sort of situations, some of the natural laws of life just seem to be overturned. I remember praying for a guy when I was in Brazil, and he limped, he could hardly walk, and he walked out of that meeting completely normally. Now that was God intervening and bringing healing in a miraculous way. I remember a few years ago, my daughter in a meeting at our church, and the speaker, American guy, was speaking, and for a few moments, her appearance changed, and she was covered in something that I can only describe as gold dust. Just a moment where God stepped in, and a miraculous mystery happened. A few minutes later, it just disappeared. But it is something that the pastor had seen before. Just a sign of God's blessing being upon someone. We know Jesus was the master at those events, turning water into wine and so many other miracles. But what can we learn from this story? Well, Joshua's prayer, "O sun, stand still," you've got to say it was a bold prayer. It wasn't something that would happen naturally. And sometimes we need to be prepared to ask God for things boldly if we feel we're fulfilling the calling that he's given us. So let's be prepared to pray bold prayers. And also let's not miss those moments when he reveals himself to us in ways that I've described. So let's move on to number two. This is something that has fascinated me for years, but I've never preached on it, but I kind of thought this was an opportunity, shall we say. And we're coming now to the stairway of Ahaz. It's kind of something you'd expect to find in The Lord of the Rings, I think. The stairway of Ahaz. Yes, we can have the first slide, David. The story is found in a couple of places in the Bible, actually. It's found in Isaiah, but also in 2 Kings 20. And just to fill you in on the story, Ahaz actually was a pretty bad king, but his son Hezekiah was good, and he followed the Lord and obeyed the Lord. But Isaiah comes along to Hezekiah later in his life and he said, "Prepare yourself, Hezekiah, you're about to die." And Hezekiah goes and seeks God and pleads before God. And God actually grants his prayer and allows him to live an extra 15 years. Now, the only thing we're told about Hezekiah's illness is that he had a boil. And you know the story that Isaiah says to the servants, "Prepare a poultice of figs and apply it to the boil." Now, probably it's not the sort of thing we use these days very often, but I remember as a child, I think it was about 10, having a rather nasty boil. And I remember vividly my mother preparing a poultice in a hot pan, and I was forced to lie down on the floor, screaming and kicking while this poultice was applied to the area. The agony is still etched in my memory. Thankfully, we don't subject to our children, hopefully, to those sort of things anymore. But anyway, a poultice of figs is applied and Hezekiah recovers. And Hezekiah asks for a sign. What is a sign from God that I'm going to get these extra 15 years? And the story goes on, the sign that God gives is the light or the shadow on the... This is what one sort of thing that the Stairway of Ours calls. It's a sundial. And you can see the shadow that's being cast. Now, normally, as the sun rises and sets, that shadow would move in that direction. But the sign is that the shadow will go back 10 steps. Now, anybody know what the 10 steps was in time? It's not something you would normally know. Well, it's actually 40 minutes. So for 40 minutes, the sun would go backwards. Now, we'll have the next slide. Another interpretation of the Stairway of Ahaz is this one. Yeah. Now, that seems more like steps, doesn't it? But that is an ancient sundial. And basically what would happen is it's set up so that as the sun rises and falls, the sun goes down the steps and up the steps. And again, 10 steps will be around 40 minutes. Now, again, astronomically, there isn't an explanation how God could achieve this. It just doesn't happen. But again, it just shows us that God is in control. And interestingly, these 10 steps that the sun went back was observed both in Jerusalem and Babylon. It's recorded in Babylon history. And the Babylonians were so concerned that something was happening which shouldn't happen, and they knew their god Marduk couldn't achieve this miracle. They sent a delegation to Jerusalem to inquire what the true God could be doing. Again, taking this story, it's a fascinating story, I think, but it just shows us how God is in control. But what can we learn from it? Well, I believe that if we're open and if we're observant, God will also show us signs of his presence, his power, and his majesty. And I'm going to tell you one that happened to me 3 weeks ago. My daughter, 18 months ago, just before the lockdown started, went over to New Zealand. She's a children's nurse working in oncology. She felt clearly called to go to New Zealand and to work in the hospital in Auckland. And this was confirmed in many ways, and she felt this was God's plan for her life. She got out there eventually, and it would just seem that there were so many obstacles from her fulfilling her calling. One of the main ones was she was promised a contract of a certain level of nursing, and when she got out there, they put her on a lower level, which didn't give her the responsibility that her standard was due. And she battled for 18 months to try and have this overturned because she felt she wasn't having the responsibility that she should have had. And we prayed and we'd sought God and we'd said, Lord, if this is your calling, why are there all these obstacles in the way? There were other things as well that happened. And about 3 weeks ago, we had a couple of missionaries at our church who spoke about how the enemy tries to stop us fulfilling the calling that God has for us. And he talked about seven things that come our way that if we're not really dedicated can throw us off course. And it just seemed to be describing, it's one of those services where you go to and you think, the speaker is speaking to me. This is right what I need to hear. And so at the end of the service, I went to him and we prayed for Sarah. And just before the meeting that day, his wife, the speaker's wife, had a vision of butterflies. And she felt it was related to people who were tied down, who weren't being able to fulfill what God was calling them to do. And then after she had this vision, this picture of butterflies, she opened her eyes and in the church building was an actual real butterfly flying around. And I thought, well, that's interesting. anyway, our church is one of these huge Church of England's Trinity Cheltenham, where it's a massive high ceilings and everything. So I was coming out of church, as I came to the outer foyer to go out the front door, there in the window was this butterfly that the speaker had seen. I just sensed, that's not coincidence. I need to do something about this. So I went over to the window, and I managed to catch this butterfly in my hands, went out the front door, and then I released it. And I said, Lord, I believe this is going to bring release to my daughter in New Zealand. I just had that sense that God was in this. 18 months she'd battled to have this problem overturned. 3 days later, we got an email from her saying they put me on the correct level. Now, these things, for me, are not coincidence. This is God intervening into a situation, giving a sign that something's going to change. When I got home that day from church, I said to my wife, something's going to break. There's going to be breakthrough this week, I believe it. God has given me a sign. 3 days later, that sign was fulfilled. The third event, which is, again, concerning the Son, we'll find it in Luke 23. And again, you all know the story so well. This is related to Jesus' death. It was now about the 6th hour, and darkness came over the whole land until the 9th hour, for the sun stopped shining. The curtain of the temple was torn in two, and Jesus called out with a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And when he had said this, he breathed his last. The sun stopped shining. And the darkness descended for 3 hours. Was it just thick cloud? Or did God somehow turn the sun off in some way? That's again for us to consider. But interesting, isn't it? The light of the world, Jesus, the light of the world, his life was extinguished. And at that point, the light, the natural light, was turned off. And there were other events that took place at that moment. We'd read about earthquakes, rocks splitting apart, the curtain torn in two, and even the resurrection of holy people came out of the graves at that moment of Jesus' death. Of course, the wonderful truth is that this isn't the end of the story. 3 days later, Jesus' life was restored. But again, relating it back to us, you know, as Christians, we'll go through times of darkness and difficulty. Life as a Christian isn't always easy. There are setbacks, there are problems, there are difficulties that we have to face. And we've all got stories where we've been through difficult, dark times with health and with other issues, losing a loved one, perhaps. Always remember the day my wife came home from the hospital and said she'd got serious tumour, that normally the prognosis was death in a short time. God had other plans, thankfully. But a terrible time of darkness just descended without any warning. And it's important when we face these times to keep steadfast in our faith and keep trusting in God, because he's with us in those dark times. And I believe that he will bring us through them. So in closing, the final message. God is our creator. He's the creator of the heavens, the earth. He's in control of all that he has made. And you know, it's an amazing privilege to know our creator and to make him known to those around us. As it's been a wonderful to hear what plans are being set in this little village to make Jesus known and to bring others to know him. And also, I'd like to say, I try and when I think of these stories today, just try and focus every day and say, what a privilege it is to spend another day on this amazing planet. And I won't be sidetracked to talk about what we need to do as individuals and churches to make our attempts to improve the ecosystems that we're all being advised are necessary for, to avoid climate change. I won't go down that road. It's perhaps for another time. So as we trust him, let's seek to fulfill the purpose that I believe he has for each one of us. Let's pray bold prayers. Expect God to do the impossible. Let's look for signs that sometimes he puts our way that just gives us encouragement. And in those dark and difficult times that we all face, let's continue to trust. Pray that God would bring us through. Amen. So, our final song, and David and Jean knew my mother very well up in Lancashire. And she was a soloist. She used to attend many churches, and I went with her very often. And this was this final song, which I thought was very appropriate to our words today, was one of her favourites, How Great Thou Art.